You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, I am Stephen Morocco from MMA Fighting, and I'm here with John Nash, a guy whose phone, like mine, probably started blowing up around early mid-morning today about the news of this settlement between the fighters and the attorneys representing the UFC, class action lawsuit. It's taken us 10 years to get to this point, but here we are. John, what was your immediate reaction to it?
Slow down here a second. There was a settlement and some sort of lawsuit today?
Right.
No, I wasn't really surprised, I guess. If you listen, I'm going to quick plug. I got my own podcast out now, the Hey Not the Face podcast on the Hey Not the Face Substack. We talked a little bit how a settlement seems likely now. And a big reason was that the TKO, because they're a public company, there's a lot of pressure to keep the stock price up. And with the Vince McMahon problems and all that stuff, the stock price was very suppressed from where they thought it should be. And so investors had told me they thought this would lead to a settlement. And woe and behold, there we are. They have a settlement.
What was your thought on the number, the 335?
I guess I can brag that I was pretty close in some of my earlier estimates, but I mean, that's just me kind of guessing. So I can't take, I thought it'd be a little higher. I thought it'd be only because they had a credit line for, I think, $455 million. And I thought they'd basically use that credit line for the lawsuit. But I think I know a lot of people reacting think it's very low, and we'll get into why it's probably not. It's not as low as it, you know, it could have been, or it shouldn't be viewed as that low. But a good example also, I would say, of why this doesn't seem that low is there was a recent example of another suit. The National Association of Realtors settled an antitrust suit that they'd lost, and the plaintiffs were awarded $1.78 billion, which was then trebled, so over $5 billion in damages that they were ordered to pay, and they ended up going back and settling and negotiating down to $416 million. So it says, you know, kind of shows you, even when large damages are there, how they can be negotiated down. And so I wasn't floored by the amount because there was a settlement, but I do understand that it looks bad because there was so much potential money that the fighters were asking for.
Right. And you talk about like big settlements, like a lot of this has been preordained, right? This has been in the works for several months, right? So when we talk about like the negotiations for where the settlement's going to end up, this was something that was worked out well in advance. This is figure didn't come out just out of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, at the last result, there might've been some fluctuation in what they wanted, but this, I'm sure that both sides had a number they're willing to do, and it fluctuated as the trial went on longer. And you got to remember, as the case goes on longer, the plaintiff's attorneys especially are going to want more compensation. But at the same time, they are also probably looking like, we need to win because we are putting more and more money into this case, and we have seen no money yet. So there's that kind of pressure. But yeah, it's $335 million. And the other thing too, you got to remember, this is for both cases, but I'm sure we'll talk a little bit. It's really just, I think, personally, just for the Lee case, because there's probably not much money going to the Johnson fighters. So,
and why is that?
Yeah, well, because the UFC introduced a class action waiver. And so every fighter that signed that class action waiver from since they introduced it, they can't be in a class action. So theoretically, they wouldn't be allowed to collect damages for this case. So they'd be removed from the pool of fighters that can collect damages. So that would take, and if you just look at the math, they introduced it, I don't know, sometime last couple of years. So it wouldn't be all the fighters in Johnson, but there were a lot of fighters that fought earlier in 2017, 18, 19, hung around and then signed contracts later, all their previous fights would be eliminated. So you could probably estimate at least half the fighters, if not three quarters that high, wouldn't be eligible to be part of the class action. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be class members, be part of the settlement.
Therefore, as a smaller class, their chances get significantly less good.
Yeah, the amount of money that they can be awarded gets lower. Especially depends on who the bigger names, fighters, you know, because the bigger portions of the revenue are now are taken out. And the other thing to remember too is even in the elite class, there's 1,214 fighters eligible to elite class, but that includes all fighters that fought in that period. Well, there's some fighters aren't eligible, and those fighters are the ones that are not Americans, aren't residents of the U.S., and didn't fight in the U.S. So if you fought outside the U.S. and were not a U.S. citizen or a U.S. resident, you are not eligible to be member of the class action. So that 1,215 probably drops to under 1,000.
Right. And that's honestly the feedback I've been talking to fighters all morning. Most of them are curious, just like, do I qualify, basically? So how do you think this thing is ultimately going to be divided up?
Well, Eric Kramer, the lead attorney, suggested during one of the hearings, or actually might have been during a Twitter conversation with Paul Giff, that it's going to be proportionate to what the fighter earned during the class period. So if the total sum total of the fighters was $600 million earned during that class period, and that's before we deduct the fighters that aren't even, you know, that aren't eligible anymore, and he made, throw up $600,000, well, that's 0.1% of the total revenue, right? So whatever the damages are, $335 million, he'd get 0.1% of that. And so he would get $335,000 in damages.
So that's before the attorneys get to it.
That's before the attorney fees, yeah. So you got to deduct the attorney fees. My understanding, they're using the Lodestar method where they pile up all their costs, and then the judge will apply a multiplier based on how they did. And usually the multiplier is like 1.5, 1.25, up to 2. So it's hard. Generally, on average, looking it up, the average percent is about 20% the Lodestar method pays out, but it can fluctuate wildly. But let's say if it's 20%, then they're getting what a manager or agent would have got for the fighters. They just have to pay another manager agent. But it's possible it could be higher. It's possibly lower, but I doubt it'd be lower considering what the cost must have been for this case so far. The economic experts and models and all that are not cheap.
Not cheap, yeah. Given the size of the settlement, given some of the numbers that were actually thrown about in the earlier parts of this case, the range that sticks in my head and a lot of people's heads was between what, 800 and 800 million and 1.6 billion, right?
Yeah.
So we hear those numbers initially, and then today we get word that they have settled for 335 million. What do you make of that as an expression of the plaintiff's, the strength of the plaintiff's case, you know, relative to, you know, what they'd be encountering in court? Like, basically, what do you think that says about how strong the case was, how strong both sides thought their case was?
Well, I mean, it was suggested the plaintiffs didn't think they have a 100% slam dunk, but no one does. These cases are very risky going to jury. It is, if you talk to people in the antitrust world and antitrust attorneys, you notice they're tweeting and sending messages of congratulation. They think that's a tremendous amount of money that the plaintiffs won. We, the fans, will look at it and say, that is just a small percentage of what we think the fighters should have got paid. So that's terrible. So when you have emotional connection to the fighters, it understandably you're like, you know, I think the fighters deserve a lot more. When you're on the other side, when you're an attorney that just does this for a living, those guys think this was a tremendous victory. But I understand. I mean, you look at 811 million to 1.6 billion. This is a fraction of that. And I think it also, what makes it especially bad is a settlement, even though we've kind of thrown numbers in the hundreds of millions before that a settlement would be that size, is it's taken 9 years. And so you'd assume there'd be some sort of interest added onto that amount, right? Because we've had to wait so long. And this includes the Johnson class. And so it feels extra small because you include that Johnson class in this, even if there's not many fighters eligible. So it's very understandable why fans think it's a paltry number. If this number had been announced 4 years ago in 2019, right, when we had the first hearing, I think a lot of people would think of it as a tremendous success for the league class. But add 4 or 5 more years now and a whole nother class of fighters, and it suddenly does not look that sound that impressive. But
on top of that, we have the injunctive relief question, right? That's still very much at issue in how this thing ultimately gets resolved, right? I mean, they kicked the can down the road a couple months ago. You reported on this when they basically said, we're not going to deal with injunctive relief with the Lee class, which is 2010 to 2017. We're going to kick that over the Johnson class. Now we have this settlement. What's going to happen with injunctive relief, and will this ultimately change any of the UFC's business practices? Do you have any sense of that?
I can only guess. We don't know yet, but based on, you know, the comments, the MMAFA was congratulated the fighters and said they're happy. And just based on, you know, no inside information, but just based on the reaction of the people involved, I have to assume that there's some sort of contractual changes in the settlement, and we will get those revealed if the judge approves the settlement in, you know, 40 to 60 days, and then we'll find out. But even if there are changes, you can assume that the UFC agreed to changes that probably appear much more only cosmetic. I mean, I would say what would be a potential yardstick to look at what these changes might be is what they did in 2017. UFC already introduced changes in 2017 to split the first Lee class from the Johnson class. And those changes were the 5-year sunset that Ngannou used, and, you know, a limit to how many times you can extend a tolling provision for turning down a fight, and a few other things, which were great for fighters, but not, they didn't really change the industry. They weren't industry changers. You know, because not only Ngannou took advantage of that 5-year period, none of the other fighters really did or left. So it was not a change that's going to completely overturn the industry. So if there were contractual changes included in the settlement, and we don't know for sure, but I'm kind of guessing there might be some, they're probably along those lines.
But also, I mean, didn't they put back or reverse a lot of the changes that they implemented in 2017? And what are we supposed to ultimately take from that?
Yeah, you know, well, because they introduced the class action waiver, right?
Yeah.
Because they did that, the same time they're introducing that class action waiver and arbitration clause, they started changing all those provisions they added so that 5-year sunset is no longer a high 5 years. There's a lot of loopholes for the UFC to extend it past that. So my guess would be maybe, and this is just a guess, no one take this as like, this is what's going to happen. But my guess would be like, maybe they're demanding as part of the agreement is you have to go back to that original sunset. You can't make it worse. I could see a change like that in the contracts. But yeah, because the UFC, I mean, and one reason these damages probably are not as high as some people think is the UFC had no threat from future lawsuits because everybody has signed a class action waiver. And the threat of injunctive relief was so far down the road, they couldn't really use that as a cudgel. So when you lose the major tools, massive damages and in the future and forced contractual changes, when you take those off the table, it takes away a lot of your leverage.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury. Not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank & Trust. Members FDIC.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
So what are some of your, I mean, you've been following this more closely than anybody for the last 10 years. What are some of your takeaways and some of your questions about where things go from here?
Well, I guess the first one is the judge approve it. What are the other components of it? I mean, it's not as big as I'm sure a lot of people wanted, but it is a benefit that the fighters, based on the $335 million, depending on how much goes to Johnson and how much for Lee class, let's say it almost all goes to the Lee class, then that's 50% of the amount of money those fighters earned during the UFC, during their UFC career during that time. So that's a 50% pay raise. It's not nothing. That's a sizable amount of money, and it's a nice check for fighters that haven't fought for a while and might need the money. So that's a positive. If there's some contractual changes, that's a positive. It's not the game changer. I guess going forward is, you know, what's the general reaction outside the UFC? Do the fighters that are part of the Johnson class that have signed these waivers, do they start asking why aren't we not compensated like that previous class? Do we see other promotions? Now, the blueprint's been laid out for an antitrust lawsuit. There were rumors that Bjorn Rebney was going to file one before he was let go by Bellator. Does one of the other promoters decide to file an antitrust lawsuit against the UFC based on this case, claiming monopoly instead of monopsony? That's a possibility. And then there's, you know, who knows, legal scrutiny may result from this, from the publicity. But I'm not sure there's going to be, the FTC might take a look at it. There's, you know, there's legislation, but I don't see much momentum on the legislation side. So I'll keep an eye on that, but I don't think none of those seem imminent. So it's still wait and see.
What's the morning been like for you, other than just, you know, having your day job being the primary point of contact for a lot of fighters on this? What is an end of this story, or an end of a big chapter of this story, mean for you?
Oh God, a break. I mean, I might be done with MMA. This is great. You know,
really?
Yeah, well, I mean, going through the ins and outs of a lawsuit and documents, and it's not really that enjoyable. It's kind of a pain in the ass, tell you the truth. It's a task going through the fine prints of complaints. So it's, you know, to finally be over, that's not the worst. I'll have more free time. But yeah. I guess, you know, I'll stick around for a while. I think there's some other, you know, other stuff might pop up that's of interest in the immediate future. I'll follow that, with the Substack and the podcast. But it is a relief, and I saved money. I didn't buy a trip to Vegas.
Right, you had a ticket, or you were thinking about buying a ticket, right?
I was gonna ask for time off from work. I get to collect my regular paycheck. I don't have to sit in a in a courtroom day in and day out. So that's a positive for me. But it's a major case that's over, and it's I was here from the beginning and I'm here from the end, and wow, great. I finished the marathon. No, it's all about me, even though it has nothing to do with me. So forget the name plaintiffs, forget Kung Lee and John Fitch. They had nothing to do with it. It was all me sitting there putting up with this whole time.
Well, it's amazing how many of them did rely upon your tweets, did rely upon your information. And it's also amazing how many of them were unaware from my calls, unaware of what's going on, unaware of what their role in it is. And that's something that I think is going to play out over the next couple months. That should be the next interesting part of this, how things actually get divvied up, who's included and who isn't. Because this is a major victory in a sense. This is the first time that they've really been forced to pay out, something like this. This is a major court case that they lost were forced to settle.
Yeah, it's just the fact that, I mean, in weird way, it does, like I said, if this had been 2019, we would look at this as a major event, but because their revenue has just exploded since they got the ESPN deal under Endeavor, the damages seem minute compared to what they were earning. So I can understand where people look at this like it's not a big win, but it is. It's someone beat the UFC and getting a settlement of $335 billion is getting a victory, right? Even if it's not the huge game-changing victory some people wanted. And on top of that, for people outside, this was fascinating because this was a very rare monopsony case. And the amount of damages awarded are extremely high in these type of cases. Very rarely do you have these type of damages awarded for workers. So from outsiders, this is a very major case. Now, for people in the industry, knowing how much money the sport generates and that these are pro athletes and, you know, people assume pro athletes should make more. Again, I can understand why people do not think it's the victory was the complete victory they'd hoped for.
Right. So what have you gotten any calls from fighters and what are you telling them, if anything?
I get DMs and texts and stuff. And some of them are confused over who I am, I think. I don't know what they're asking about. But most of them, I'm just trying to tell them, listen, you're going to have to wait to get the news. And I think you're eligible, you're not eligible, things of those nature. But I got to say, over the years, I've learned that the majority of fighters, even now, less so than in the past, do not know who I am, do not follow the case. But there is probably, I guess, a score or more, a couple dozen fighters that follow the case closely. And who they can DM me and ask questions, but I already know they know the answer. They follow it more closely than all the other fighters. So there's not much news I have to share with them, just to point them in the direction of what happened or confirm. So, and it's always I'm not going to give their names. They always promise anonymity, but it's the type of fighter you'd expect that would follow the case.
Hmm. Of course. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to answer my questions. Really appreciate it. Your expertise is always appreciated. All right. That's all we have for you for today. We will keep you updated on this when and if there are more developments. This has been Stephen Morocco of MMA Fighting talking to John Nash about the UFC antitrust settlement. Keep it locked to MMA Fighting for more news. Thanks very much.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.